Is the Texas Chainsaw Massacre just a slasher or a ritualistic horror masterpiece? From real cattle blood and face masks to Saturn retrograde secret societies and cannibalistic vampires, we break it all down. The making, the meaning, the hidden esoteric symbolism behind Texas Chainsaw Massacre. That's right. Today we're doing a film analysis of the classic horror movie, Texas Chainsaw Massacre. We're going to talk about the origins, the making of the film. We're going to walk through the whole story as we reveal symbolism of the elites, astrology, Saturn, blood sacrifice, vampires, energy rituals, voodoo, Satanism, Freemasonry, cannibalism, and of course the Illuminati. Illuminate confirmed the Texas Chainsaw Massacre. I'm sorry, Leatherface, but I had to do it. You know, every year for Halloween, we do a horror film, right? I try to hit one every year. And the last few years, we hit the Halloween series. We hit Halloween 1, 2, and 3. But we're going to shift gears this year and hit the Texas Chainsaw Massacre. And I ranked the Texas Chainsaw movies. I watched the whole series. If you go to my letterbox, Isaac Weisop is the username. Peep that if you're into if you're a horror nerd like me. You can find it on my link tree, linked in the show notes. Now, let's start with my prerequisites for any film analysis that I do, because as you know, my forte is finding occult symbolism hidden in our favorite pop culture. And we're going to talk about the cast and the breakdown and all the things, right? So first off, should you watch this movie if you haven't seen it yet? I don't know who hasn't. It's one of the best, if not the greatest horror film of all time, but it's not for the squeamish. It'll make you nauseous if you're not into this kind of thing. So that's your warning. It'll also amplify any kind of haunted house, spook alley that you ever go to in the future. You choose if that's good or bad for you. I don't know. Because, you know, every spook alley's got a chainsaw man, which always terrifies me regardless. And how long is this movie? What kind of investment are you making? Well, I can tell you that this podcast is probably going to be longer than the movie. Well, maybe not longer than the movie, but it's more than the perfect 90-minute length. It's only 83 minutes. How you love that? 83 minutes. My man came in at less than 90. You can't beat that. Let's talk about the making of Texas Chainsaw, because it's actually pretty interesting. The movie's quite legendary. Differing accounts, some say it was made between $100,000 and $300,000 is what it took to make this movie in the 70s there, 74, I believe. And ends up grossing 30 million plus, 30 M's, franchises, all kinds of stuff, right? And the movie was so gory back in the 70s when this thing released that it was banned in a bunch of countries. Theaters would stop showing it because audience members were complaining about the gore. It's a different world back in the 70s. They couldn't even dream of the Saw and Hostel movies. But Tobe Hooper, the director, he came up with the idea for Texas Chainsaw Massacre when he was Christmas shopping. That's right. New York Post wrote an article about it. Noticing a bunch of chainsaws in an upright display, he fantasized about slicing and dicing his way through the consumer swarm. He repressed his dream of a Yuletide bloodbath. But once he escaped the claustrophobic maw and settled back home, visions of chainsaws whirred in his head, setting off a chain reaction of story ideas. Now, also, the idea of Leatherface, as you know, wears the mask of his victims, like a skin mask. This was inspired by a doctor who once told Tobe Hooper that he had made a mask from a cadaver back in the pre-med days. What? Oh, boy. And this was a low-budget film, like I said. They did it in Texas in July, and the heat was unbearable. It was 110 degrees, not an air conditioner to be found in 1974. They didn't even have enough budget to make multiple costumes, so poor Leatherface and company had to wear the same gross outfits every take. And in some of the scenes, there's blood and bones and crap everywhere, right? Well, that was real. That was real cattle blood on the walls of the houses and real bones scattered everywhere. They actually got a bunch of them from a local slaughterhouse. And furthermore, people were literally being hit and cut in this movie. One guy almost died getting hacked up by a chainsaw. It's crazy. There's a making of documentary out there. I've seen it years ago. But the actors, it's interesting, the actors got a cut of the shares for the distribution of the film, mostly because they couldn't, the film was a film on such a low budget that they couldn't afford to pay the actors up front. But then the actors, they fumbled in negotiation and with the first film distributor. So what ended up happening the first time they distributed the film was that the actors had to split up $8,000 amongst 20 of them. But then later they sued the distributor after it became a hit. And then the distributor went out of business anyway. And then New Line Cinema picked it up in 1983. And then they got paid properly at that point. Now, who's in it? Well, first off, let's talk about the director. The most famous person involved is the director, Tobe Hooper. Now, he died in 2017, but he's a legend in the horror film industry. He's from Austin, Texas, where this movie was basically filmed, nearby, the sort of rural areas outside of Austin. Also, I think I was a little too hard on Austin when I went last year. I had a rough go. I had a homeless guy charge at me, and I lost my toenail. I talked about this on my Breaking Social Norms podcast back in May of 24, I believe, when we went down there for the Great Eclipse. I should give it another shot. All right. I was a little, I had no toenail that I had to rip my own toenail off. It was terrible. Okay. But ironically, when the eclipse happened, we drove west from Austin because we were trying to get out from under the cloud cover. And we actually drove, I didn't even know it, we drove right by the house that they filmed Texas Chainsaw at. I was like, oh my God, like lost opportunity. My goodness. It's out near like Fredericksburg, which is where LBJ and his big old hog used to have a farm. But anyway, LBJ's big hog on the farm. So Tobe Hooper, he started making films in 1969. A film called Eggshells that he co-wrote with Kim Henkel. All right. Then the second film he did was Texas Chainsaw Massacre, also with Kim Henkel. And Kim, which is a dude, by the way, they would kind of continue having input on the Texas Chainsaw series. Kim did Texas Chainsaw from 2003, Texas Chainsaw Next Generation with Matthew McConaughey. All right, all right, all right. Which has Illuminati references, as we'll talk about in the conclusion. Texas Chainsaw The Beginning from 2006, Texas Chainsaw 3D, Leatherface, and the 2022 Texas Chainsaw Netflix flop. What a bummer that was. Now, Tobe, if you want to know where I rank that one, check out my letterboxed Texas Chainsaw list. So, Tobe Hooper also did the classic 1979 Stephen King Salem's Lot miniseries. He did Funhouse, which was great. He did Poltergeist. I mean, that's obviously a huge one, right? He also did Texas Chainsaw 2, which arguably might be, well, not better. It's an interesting story. I love Texas Chainsaw 2 as much as I love Texas Chainsaw 1, almost. It's got Dennis Hopper. I mean, come on. And he also did, Tobe also did an episode of Freddy's Nightmares. And fun fact, he filmed the Billy Idol music video for Dancing with Myself. No big deal. Another fun fact, Tobe Hooper was at the University of Texas in Austin when Charles Whitman shot the people from the clock tower. And Whitman actually shot and killed a police officer that was standing right next to Tobe Hooper. Which, through 6 degrees of separation, takes us into, there's a scene in Full Metal Jacket where they talk about the Whitman shootings and what one motivated Marine and his rifle can do, which is filmed by Stanley Kubrick and, oh boy, Tobe and Stanley. So Tobe Hooper and Kim wrote the story of Texas Chainsaw loosely based on a mix of inspirations, the ones I talked about already, plus a sprinkle of Ed Gein, which is like the Netflix series, you know, Ed Gein. Texas Chainsaw, and fun fact, I talked about this on Breaking Social Norms as well. When me and my wife went down to Zach Bagan's Haunted Museum, there's an Ed Gein room, and there's this pot that he used to boil his bones in inside of a big glass case. My wife accidentally bumped into the case. I was like, ugh. You know, thank God there was a case around it, because I was like, weird energy on some of that stuff, right? The Haunted Museum was creepy, by the way. Also had the Bela Lugosi mirror in the basement, which I actually paid for the VIP to go down there, but then I backed out. Once I got in there, I was like, ooh, the energy, the vibes, I ain't passing the vibe check in here. Which we're going to talk about Bela Lugosi in this movie as well, and in the conclusion. Now, Texas Chainsaw, strangely enough, would influence Ridley Scott for the Alien movie, believe that or not. Now, in the cast itself, no one really broke out and became a star. All right. Marilyn Burns plays Sally, and it's arguable that she is the queen of horror. She's the first famous scream queen. She's the one of the first famous final girls. She also would play Linda Kasabian on the Helter Skelter TV show, and she made a bunch of cameos in Return of Texas Chainsaw, Texas Chainsaw 3D. In seventh grade, she started out her acting career in a play of Midsummer Night's Dream, tying us into the theories that I talked about with Robert Frederick on my episode in September about the Shakespeare conspiracy. Because he was saying that every actor seems to have to pay dues to Shakespeare. Sadly, she would die in 2014, unspecified cause of death. Paul Partain plays the role of Franklin. Now, Paul, he's from Austin, Texas, Vietnam vet, and he basically stopped acting after this movie. Like, what? And he would end up being a manager of an electronics store. He made a cameo in The Return of Texas Chainsaw, but died of cancer in 2005. Edwin Neal plays the hitchhiker, easily the most memorable character. He would also be in JFK. He was also a Vietnam vet. He got a bronze star for, combat zone stuff. And fun fact, he owns the world's largest poster collection. He's still kicking it. He's still doing small roles here and there. The other main actor we want to talk about is the guy who plays Leatherface, Gunnar Hansen, described as the mentally impaired cannibal. Now, Gunnar was born in Iceland, ends up growing up in Austin because they did hire from the local area. And he kept on acting after Texas Chainsaw, did some writing. He was in Texas Chainsaw 3D. Also, the highly acclaimed Hollywood Chainsaw Hookers. I never seen it. I don't know. And he did a bit of method acting for this role in Texas Chainsaw because Leatherface is a special needs character. So Gunner spent time at a school for developmentally disabled children where his mother had worked, and he was studying their movements. So we also have this milestone in this film of Leatherface being easily the most popular special needs killer. Gunner sadly died in 2015 of pancreatic cancer. Oh, and last but definitely not least, at the beginning of the film, there's a narrator. And that narrator is John Larroquette. Yes, that John Larroquette from Night Court, the movie Stripes, tons of TV shows. And fun fact, he almost lost his entire nose during a, he was filming something and there was a scene where a door was supposed to open, it didn't, and his head smashed through the glass. Anyway, Texas Chainsaw was actually his first film appearance, and he did the role in exchange for a payment of marijuana. And he's got a massive resume. He was also in the 2022 garbage Texas Chainsaw movie. So, now, without further ado, let's get into the movie. Plot spoilers from here on out. If you're still with me, let's go. They start out with the forewarning by John Larroquette, suggesting it is a real story and one of the most bizarre crimes in the annals of American history. And they refer to Sally and her invalid brother, Franklin. He's in a wheelchair. And about how this whole summer afternoon turned into a nightmare. Take a listen.
The film which you are about to see is an account of the tragedy which befell a group of five youths, in particular, Sally Hardesty and her invalid brother, Franklin. It is all the more tragic in that they were young. But had they lived very, very long lives, they could not have expected, nor would they have wished to see as much of the mad and macabre as they were to see that day. For them, an idyllic summer afternoon drive became a nightmare. The events of that day were to lead to the discovery of one of the most bizarre crimes in the annals of American history, the Texas Chainsaw Massacre.
Now, that whole based on a true story bit has always been done since film started, but Texas Chainsaw was the one that had some virality to it. Blair Witch Project is probably the second most famous to pull it off, maybe even the most famous, actually. But back in 1974, there was a lot of protesting about the Vietnam War, and I'm going to read to you from Wikipedia. Hooper has cited changes in the cultural and political landscape as central influences on the film. His intentional misinformation that the film you're about to see is true was a response to being lied to by the government about things that were going on all over the world. Man was the real monster here, just wearing a different face, so I put a literal mask on the monster in my film. So as you're going to find out by the time we get through this whole thing and the conclusion, the Texas Chainsaw series is the most sort of like conspiratorial horror movie that there is if you read between the lines of what's going on. And they specifically talk about it in Texas Chainsaw Next Generation. Wait for the conclusion, okay? So let's set up the scene. It's August 18th, 1973. It's Texas, and it's flaming hot. Texas is brutally hot in the summers. I went through basic training in San Antonio in January, and I remember just, like, there was, like, humidity. The walls were just, like, sweating. Like, it was just so hot everywhere you went. I can't imagine August. And we see this great little feature that Hooper does. He does these photo flashes of, like, ooey gooey body parts, nice little camera flash technique, right? And they're playing the news, and the news anchors are going on and on and on and on and on about grave robbings that happen outside of Newt, Texas. Calls it a grisly work of art, and it shows like the cemetery with this body set up like a piece of art. Take a listen.
Texas is this hour's top news story. An informant led officers of the Muerto County Sheriff's Department to a cemetery just outside the small rural Texas community of Newt early this morning. Officers there discovered what appeared to be a grisly work of art, the remains of a badly decomposed body wired to a large monument. A second body was found in a ditch near the perimeter of the cemetery. Subsequent investigation has revealed at least a dozen empty crypts, and it's feared more will turn up as the probe continues. Deputies report that in some instances, only parts of a corpse had been removed. The head, or in some cases, the extremities removed, the remainder of the corpse left intact. Evidence indicates the robberies have occurred over a period of time. Sheriff Jesus Maldonado refused to give details in the ghoulish case and said only that he did have strong evidence linking the crime to elements outside the state. Area residents have reportedly converged on the cemetery, fearing the remains of relatives have been removed. No suspects are in custody as the investigation at the scene continues. Oil storage units continue to burn out of control at the huge Texaco refinery near the Texas-Louisiana border. Three storage units exploded into...
Now, this also made me think of the grisly art found in the Jeffrey Dahmer photos that he was taking, where he would kill people, arrange their corpses, and then later on, old Skippy Podesta's brother was buying art that had the same exact arrangement of a decapitated person. And sure enough, in our exciting conclusion, we'll talk about how Texas Chainsaw has connections to the pizza email elites, right? So finally, we get to the credits. Iconic credits, my goodness. And you're going to see a lot of the DNA of Texas Chainsaw in Rob Zombie's House of 1,000 Corpses. Also, by the way, Rob Zombie, largely influenced by Texas Chainsaw, obviously, which is why Rob Zombie's great too. Come at me, bro. I know people don't like the, you know, Rob Zombie's a love it or hate it kind of guy, and I'm easily a lover. Now, after the credits, we see a shot of the full moon, right? This is our first hint of Illuminate confirmedness. Astrology a huge component of the theories of this film that I'm going to lay out. Now, it's and it's a recurring theme in the movie, and that's why it's basically the first shot after the credits are setting it up. And now it's daytime. There's a dead Texas Amarillo in the road, and then this Scooby-Doo van full of hippies is pulled over. And if you listen during this scene, the news announcers keeps going on and on about mutilated bodies being found and all these murders. I'm like, damn, what's going on in Texas, y'all? What are you doing down there, y'all? That's a murder. It's murder in Texas, man. Okay, so Franklin, the invalid, is that a PC term? It seems like not a PC term. Franklin, he's in the wheelchair, and they help him out of the van. And I don't use that, just to rewind for a second. I don't use that term invalid. That's what they call him in the opening credits. Okay, just to be clear. But they he has to take a leak, so they help him get out of the van. A truck drives by, and Franklin's in a wheelchair, and this truck drives by, and apparently drives by so fast that it launches Franklin's wheelchair down this hill. He falls out of it. We're already off to a bad start. Everyone gets back in the van. They're rolling down the street, the highway. And one of the women in the van is reading about Saturn being in retrograde. Take a listen.
Okay.
This heat is just driving me crazy. I don't know if I can take much more.
The condition of retrogradation is contrary or inharmonious to the regular direction of actual movement in the zodiac and is in that respect evil. Hence, when malefic planets are in retrograde, and Saturn's malefic, okay, their malefice is increased.
Have you been doing those Reader's Digest word power columns again?
Jerry, it just means Saturn's a bad influence. It's just particularly a bad influence now because it's in retrograde.
Hey, man, you believe all that stuff your old lady's hawking me?
I don't know.
You see, Saturn is another theme in this film because Saturn is the devourer of harvest that demands blood sacrifice. So when Saturn is in retrograde, astrologically speaking, it appears to be moving in reverse, and it's supposed to be causing disturbances on Earth and conflicts amongst one another, and it resurfaces any kind of karmic debts that demand resolution for any issues you've been struggling with in the past, okay? We'll come back to Saturn. The gang pulls over, and one of the woman's grandfather's tombstone is in the cemetery that they're at. And what they're trying to do is they're trying to make sure it didn't get, because as you heard in the news, someone was digging up bodies at the cemetery, and she's like, well, I got to go check on Grandpa. So they pull over, and the cops are there. The sheriff's drinking his ass off, moonshine, no doubt, using Southern stereotypes. And he starts talking about how he sees things, and there's things that go on there. There's weird things, foreshadowing. And so the woman's like, I got to go check out this grave to see if the vandals dug it up or not. And it wasn't. Okay, cool. Back in the Scooby-Doo van we go. And they drive by a slaughterhouse where Granddaddy used to work. He used to sell his cattle. And then Franklin talks about how he's like, yeah, they used to bash in the cow's head with a sledgehammer to kill him. And he's like grotesquely going on and on about how it makes the cows squeal and they'd have to hit him a couple times. But now there's this bolt gun that drives a bolt into their skull to kill them. It's important to the story, believe it or not. So they see a weird looking hitchhiker. So, it's the 70s. Naturally, they pull over to pick him up, right? And Franklin calls this guy Dracula. All right? Keep that in the back pocket. Now, the hitchhiker gets in and he says, yeah, my brother and my dad used to work at the slaughterhouse too. And he's like, my whole family is into meat. And he talks about how the old way of killing a cow with a hammer was a better way of doing it. And then Franklin, Franklin comments about how this hitchhiker, his whole family seems to be full of Draculas. Huh. The hitchhiker's going on and on about how they make head cheese and how they use everything from the cow. And he's got Polaroid photos of this stuff. Like, he's a total weirdo, right? He's freaking everybody out in the van. Franklin, for whatever reason, wants to play along. And Franklin, he's got a little 3-inch knife, and the hitchhiker loves the knife. He loves it so much, he snatches it out of Franklin's hand, and he starts to cut his own hand, and he draws blood from this knife. And this is another hint of this energetic ritual of sorts, right? You see the cutting of one's own hand is something you often see in rituals like blood oaths to the brotherhood. It's used in ritual magic to put power onto a sigil. Like, remember Grant Morrison was talking about sex magic rituals to save his comic, and sometimes people, they'd be dumping the clip onto a sigil. It gets weird. So anyway, the hitchhiker, he then pulls his own knife, and it's one of those old timey straight edge beard razors, right? And the Scooby-Doo gang is like, okay, this guy's got to go. Hey, bro, we got to drop you off, you weirdo. But then something weird happens. He takes a photo of Franklin with his Polaroid camera and demands Franklin pay him $2 for the photo. Classic big city tactic of hustling tourists. And Franklin gives it back to him, and the hitchhiker does more ritualistic stuff. He starts burning the photo like he's cursing him, right? Something you see with sympathetic magic rituals or voodoo dolls and so on. Take a listen.
It didn't turn out so good.
Hey, it's a nice picture. Hey, you can pay me now.
Huh?
$2. It's a good picture.
No, man. Franklin, give him back the damn picture.
So the hitchhiker then pulls his blade and cuts Franklin's arm. The crew freaks out. They kick him out of the van. But when the hitchhiker gets kicked out of the van, he takes the blood from his hand and he wipes it on the outside of the van like he's marking it. Again, ritualistic. And it kind of looks like an X, as in like X marks the spot, meaning they're now a target. The van has been targeted. But it also looks like a Sith, a Reaper. What do you call that? A scythe? What do you call that? Like Saturn, right? The Grim Reaper's got the sickle. That's what's called, sickle. Kind of looks like a sickle as well, with a sort of a loop top, which is very strange. So they kick him out. All this crazy stuff happens, and they're driving again, and the woman is reading more astrology stuff about Franklin and how it's going to be a disturbing day, as if that wasn't already a disturbing day. And the driver asks the woman to read Sally's astrology. And then she says something about Capricorn being ruled by Saturn, and something ominous about having to pinch yourself to realize that what is happening is real. Take a listen.
Hey, listen to Franklin's horoscope.
Sally.
Travel difficulties, long-range plans, and upsetting persons around you could make this disturbing and unpredictable day. The events in the world are not doing much either to cheer one up.
That's just perfect.
Oh, Franklin, I think that'll be all right.
If every tally, just careful.
Oh, no. Capricorn's ruled by Saturn. There are moments when we cannot believe that what is happening is really true. Pinch yourself and you may find out that it is.
Girl, I met last night.
So now they pull into a gas station, and the attendant, he's staring up at the sun again with this, you know, noting the power, it seems. And this reminds me of John Carpenter's Prince of Darkness, which I talked about in Aliens, UFOs, and the Occult, Use Your Illusion 2, my book. And the point is that there's an occult thing happening here with the universe, all right? So the gas station, naturally out of gas. The crew asked the old man, he's like, hey, do you know where the old Franklin place is? And the old gas station guy warns them, you know, you boys don't be fooling around other folks' property. Now, fun fact, Franklin in the wheelchair, apparently his name is Franklin. If this is his grandfather's house, which is kind of a stupid name, right? But Franklin, he's talking about how... he's in the van and he's talking about how he's still got the hitchhiker's blood on his knife still. And he's playing with the knife and he's picking at it and playing with it. And then about a 1 minute, he proceeds to eat some fruit without washing his hands or nothing. I was like, oh, that's probably the most grotesque thing about this whole movie, to be honest. So then we hear that Newt, Texas is the closest place to get gas, right? Newt, Texas, of course, the same Newt, Texas from earlier that the all the terrible stuff's happening. So they're going to head over to Grandpa's place, and they talk about how they think the hitchhiker may have wrote something on the van in his blood. They flat out tell you that this isn't just him smearing it. There was a symbol loaded onto the van. So they finally pull up to the old Franklin house, and they're damn near out of gas. And of course, it's all dilapidated and hasn't been inhabited for decades, it looks like. And someone gets out of the van and says it looks like the birthplace of Bela Lugosi. Again, another reference to the vampires. What are we talking about with the vampires? They examine the blood print and that the hitchhiker left on the van. And the one guy says it's like the mark of Zorro, referring us back to the idea of that blood sigil being of Saturn being on the van. It's the mark of Saturn. So they all go into the house. Of course, it's a mess. There's spiders and tetanus everywhere. My goodness. And there's a clearly marked triangle on the doorway. What is that about? And in case you're just listening to the audio version, I'm going to make I down do video versions of this show. If you go tier two on the supporter feeds on Patreon and VIP section, you can watch the ad-free video version of this show. My goodness. Most of my videos I'm able to get up on YouTube at Occult Symbolism. They block a lot of stuff, and there's a lot of drama with the YouTube and ads, but... I'm going to put that on there, and I'll put the images of what I'm talking about here. And if I can, I'll get them on Instagram as well. But you'll notice the triangle at the doorway. What's that triangle? It's the triangle of manifestation. I propose they are, in fact, doing magical rituals in this house. So everyone's in the house, typical horror movie. Everyone's giggling, except for Franklin. Now he's annoyed that everyone else is having a good time, and he's stuck downstairs. And one of the couples is like, oh, let's go swimming in the disease-infested waterhole, right? And Franklin, he sees a couple of strange pieces of evidence of rituals, like witchcraft or voodoo. There's talismans, these charms of bones and animal things. So the couple, they get to the waterhole. Naturally, it's all dried up. But while they're there, they see another house in the distance, and they're like, oh, perfect. Let's go see if we can get some gas from that house. They walk up to the house. It's total hoarder house territory with multiple vehicles hidden underneath camo netting, which is like kind of a clue, right? And they go to the front porch and knock. Nobody's home. But they manage to see a human tooth on the porch. And the guy picks it up and hands it to his girlfriend. A little prank, ha ha ha. Picking up teeth with a bare hand, playing with blood on a stranger's knife, and then eating fruit. These people are insane. So old girl, she storms off. She's like, ugh. And he decides, he's like, look, I'm just going to walk into this hoarder house. And when he walks in, you can see a room straight back with a bunch of skulls mounted on the walls. And dummy proceeds to go towards that room. And right when he gets to the threshold of the door, we're introduced to Leatherface. Leatherface comes out with a sledgehammer, and bam, it's one to the dome. It's murder. And Kirk, the boyfriend here, he starts flopping around just like we heard about the cattle earlier when they get hit in the head with the hammer. His girl, completely oblivious, she's out front on the swing and she's like, all right, let me go check on Kirk. And she goes into the house too. And she walks into this room of horrors of chicken feathers and bones and skulls everywhere. And then she sees Leatherface and she tries to run, but Leatherface is faster. He snatches her up, throws her up on a giant meat hook while he proceeds to fire up his chainsaw and cut up her boyfriend right in front of her into pieces. Now, you can't see a ton of gore, ironically, you know, because if this movie was made today, they would show all of it, which, dare I say, is too much. But back then, they had to cut out a ton to get an R rating, and it straight up still got banned and denied in a bunch of countries, right? Now, fun fact, this scene, they used a real chainsaw, and they almost actually killed the actor. It came within a couple inches of killing him. And you're going to hear at some point in this analysis, I talk about how the cast hated Toby Hooper by the end of this thing. So they get back in the van at, they get back to the van, a few of them, right? And Franklin is still talking about this blood sigil on the van. And he thinks the hitchhiker is now going to kill him. And he asks, and you know, they have no idea what happened at the chainsaw house. They don't know that these people who went off to get gas are dead. And he asks Sally if she believes in all that retrograde talk. And he's like, I'm really scared this guy's going to kill me and Saturn's in retrograde and right? So the John Lennon looking dude comes out and he's like, look, I'm going to go over to the house to find Kirk. And then he goes to the front porch of the house, knocks, nobody answers. But then he sees their blanket and he's like, you know what? Maybe I should just walk into this creepy house. Maybe they're playing a prank. He goes right into the animal skull room. Here's a banging on the freezer and great scene. He opens it up and there's old girl. She's in there. And here comes Leatherface. And Leatherface, he's screaming, he's panicking. And this is a weird scene because he looks out the window now and he like sits and he puts his head in his hands like he's going to be in trouble for doing this. Anyway, now it's nighttime. Again, shot of the full moon. Sally and Franklin, they're at the van. They debate if they should go get help or look for Jerry, right? And Sally is like, look, I'm not going to leave without my boyfriend, Jerry. So she's like, I'm going to go over to that house. And Franklin, he's acting like a little bitch right now, crying about it. And he decides, look, if you're going to the house, I'll go with you. Bad idea. Again, another shot of the full moon. And the whole point is to show us with these shots of the moon and the sun is to show us as above, so below, the hermetic doctrine that the magician on Earth can influence the planets and vice versa. So they're going through the path to this house and they're screaming for Jerry and boom, out pops Leatherface with a chainsaw. And just like that, Franklin's dead. He was right the whole time. That whole astrology talk, the whole curse on the van, he was 100% correct. And that's why he didn't want to go. And Sally, she takes off running. She runs right to the house. She runs upstairs, though. And she finds Grandma and Grandpa in the room chilling, which is quite disturbing because they basically look dead, sort of. We'll find out Grandpa is still alive. Grandma's definitely dead. She's a skeleton at this point. And she jumps out the way. And as far as I know, this was like mind-blowing in the 70s, right? Because Psycho was just a few years prior, and the rating people had a fit because it showed a toilet on the movie. And they're like, you can't show a toilet. My goodness. And then you got disintegrating bodies. It's crazy. Anyways, the film holds up great. She jumps out the window, runs back towards the van, but now Leatherface is chasing her. Great cardio, by the way, on both of these people, especially Leatherface. He's a massive man who's carrying a massive chainsaw. So let's not forget about the cardio of Gunner. So Sally's running. She gets to the gas station. She crashes through the door. There's the old man from earlier. Thank goodness. She's screaming. She's like, call the police, get help. And the man's like, okay. He's like, look, there's nobody out there now. I got no phone. I'm going to drive you to the next town for help. And she looks over and she's like, sounds good. She looks over and there's a a wood stove of sorts, and all dude is barbecuing up some strange looking meats. You know what those meats are. It ain't meat. It ain't beef. So he shows up with his truck and proceeds to put her in a burlap sack and tie her up. And before he does that, she tries to grab a machete, but it doesn't matter. He's got a broom. And the broom, he beats her up with a broom and ties her up. Takes this old bloody rag and shoves it into her mouth. And I don't, knowing what I know about this movie, I'm like, maybe that was a real bloody rag. I don't know. These people, I hope they're up on all their shots, okay? If you believe in that sort of thing. In this scene, they actually had him really hit her, apparently. And she consented to it. And he wasn't really loving it, but like he did it, right? He kept hitting her. And when they cut, she passed out because it hurt so bad, I guess. So anyway, he gets her in the truck. And he's like, oh, darn, I forgot to lock the front door of the gas station and turn off the lights because the cost of electricity is outrageous. That's what he says. So there's this whole thing. And he's casually beating on her as he drives her. You know where he's taking her. He's taking her to the house. He's not taking her for help. He's giggling the whole time. And then here's the hitchhiker dude stumbling around the driveway going towards the house. And the man stops and gets out and he talks about how he almost got caught, and you know they're arguing about staying away from the graveyard, and he starts beating on him, and he's like, oh, you shouldn't have left your brother alone. So now it's like, oh, they're all family. Okay. And they left Leatherface, the brother, alone. So the gas station guy, he starts beating on Leatherface too for ruining the door. So like, this guy's got to be dad, and Leatherface and the hitchhiker are his sons. We know that now. He tells Hitchhiker, he's like, go up and grab Grandpa. Yes, the dead guy. Go grab Grandpa. And meanwhile, they tie up Sally to a chair in the dining room. And here comes Grandpa carried down the stairs in the chair so they can set up over the dining room table with Sally. And they proceed to cut Sally's finger and put it into Grandpa's mouth as he sucks blood from her finger. And he's even doing a little nom nom dance. These people really are vampires. Now, fun fact, Toby Hooper really cut her finger in this scene because they had fake blood that was supposed to happen, but it wasn't cooperating. So he just went up and was like, screw it. And he cut her finger. This is one of the reasons why the cast hated him. And the guy who played Grandpa, because Grandpa's sitting there with like a big mask. He can't, because he looks like a dead person or something. The guy who played Grandpa said, I didn't find out until years later I was actually sucking on her blood, which is kind of erotic, really. What? And I read a New York Post article that this dining room scene that we're about to go through was filmed in a 26-hour marathon filming, and the house had no air conditioning. It was 115 degrees, and the actors would periodically have to run outside for fresh air and to vomit. Okay, back to the movie. We get another shot of the full moon. Sally wakes up. Everyone's at the dinner table now, and there's a bunch of weird meats on their plate, which obviously isn't beef. And there's even a skin over the dining room light, and Leatherface is wearing a new face with makeup on it. Dad starts arguing about who's doing all the work in this house. It sounds like a very typical family fight, to be honest. And Sally is begging for her life, and the family is mocking her, right? And it's a pretty terrifying sequence, honestly. And they decide they're going to let Grandpa have a whack at Sally with the sledgehammer. They're going to kill her like the cattle, like Grandpa used to do. And Dad's going on and on. He's like, oh, you know, my family's the best. They're so accurate with the hammer, they could kill in the first whack. So they hold Sally's head over a bucket, and they give Grandpa the hammer, but he's, you know, really old, and he has a hard time swinging it. He's barely swinging it. Like, I feel like if he would have made contact, it wouldn't have even hurt. So he's kind of lazily swinging this hammer at her head. And in the commotion, she breaks free. And she sprints towards the window, jumps through it. And now Hitchhiker and Leatherface, they run after her. Hitchhiker catches up to her, and it's morning now. It's dawn now. And he's stabbing on her. But then a big rig called the Black Maria comes through at just the right time and runs over the hitchhiker, and he's clearly dead now. The driver stops. He gets out to help Sally, but here comes Leatherface with the chainsaw. All right. So now they're doing this little, thing where they're chasing each other, and a different pickup truck cruises down the road. Sally hops in the back. Leatherface is chasing after her with the chainsaw. She takes off in the truck, maniacally laughing, covered in blood. And the final shot of the movie is Leatherface swinging the chainsaw and dancing in the dawn. What is happening in this movie? Well, in conclusion, let's break it down. What are we going to illuminate, confirm here? First, let's talk about Michael Hoffman, Secret Societies and Psychological Warfare book. And we talked about this idea extensively in the Twin Peaks Grey Lodge series. If you haven't checked that out, I don't know what you're doing. Patreon.com/Illuminati Watcher. Go check it out. 55 episodes about Twin Peaks that most of you didn't want. And we talked about this idea in there about how there's this struggle that Michael Hoffman describes of the capitalist material realm versus nature. And we talked about how this shows up in Twin Peaks as the Packard sawmill. It shows us the struggle in the credits, right? And Twin Peaks is all about the woods fighting back against the capitalist forces. Well, we kind of have that here with Leatherface using the chainsaw. Recall all the talk about Saturn being in retrograde, shots of the movement of the sky objects and the full moons, which again, you see a ton of in Twin Peaks. And Saturn would, you know, destroy the Earth using the sickle. And if you think that's a stretch, there's a dialogue in the movie about how technology ruined how they used to kill cattle with the sledgehammer, the old-fashioned way, remember? And they're like, oh, the sledge was better. And they even try to do it to our final girl. Now, it should also be noted that the secret society of the Freemasons or the cryptocracy that Michael Hoffman and James Shelby Downer talked about, that's the Illuminati, right? Well, they would routinely evoke and reenact the ritualistic murder of their dear leader, Hiram Abiff. And how would they do that? With the three ruffians, the three hobos, striking Hiram Abiff in the head with a hammer. Huh? See how that was depicted in this film? They tried to do that with Sally. And recall how Tobe Hooper was inspired to create this film originally. He was Christmas shopping and he was fantasizing about cutting through all the capitalistic shoppers with a chainsaw. So that's one element. Another element is, of course, astrology, the oldest art in the occult. And one of the names considered for this film was actually Saturn in retrograde, referring, of course, to the forces of Saturn, the Grim Reaper trying to catch bodies. And when Saturn is in retrograde, it causes all this conflict on Earth, which is depicted through the moon and the sun. And the chainsaw family seems very well versed in occult rituals, right? They know this. They are in the Saturn death cult, and they're doing blood sacrifice rituals to Saturn, which I'm going to deep dive here in the next couple of months. The Brotherhood of Saturn, the death cult of Saturn, and why they do blood sacrifices. Now, furthermore, they are doing it with Freemasonic Hiram Abiff symbolism in the movie. Now, I went and saw the re-release of Texas Chainsaw Massacre a couple of weeks ago. Me and Jimmy the Jackhammer went to the theater. And at the end, they played a 5-minute preview of a new documentary about the making of Texas Chainsaw Massacre. What's it called? Anyway, the 5 minutes I saw had Patton Oswalt in it, and he talks about his theory about the movie is that it's an apocalypse and it's actually happening everywhere, and that's why they keep looking up at the sun and the moon. Patton Oswalt's interesting because he got roped into the conspiracy world when he seemingly defended James Gunn, the director who got fired from Guardians of Galaxy 3, because James Gunn had tweeted some weird jokes about R-A-P to the E and P-E-D to the O stuff, right? And people then went after Patton, claiming that he was one of those types of people. I don't know. It's just strange. But the apocalypse theory is interesting. I like that. Next, cannibalism. It's a story about magical vampires doing blood sacrifices and cannibalism practices, right? They're absorbing the powers of the victims. And they're all young people, and there's this ritualistic element of this in the Last Supper scene. Remember, Grandpa's getting the nom-noms from old girl's blood, which, as I stated, was a real thing that really happened in the movie when they filmed it. And the crew call this the Last Supper scene, right, in the making of the film, which I think that's literally being used as a satanic black mass of the blood and body that they're eating and they're drinking the blood. And Grandpa's like the high priest here. And it's the reason, one reason for the cannibalism is the debasement thing of mankind. It's like the ultimate form of power over another, like a nihilistic view of how you can have power over one another. You could eat them. And they refer to Dracula several times in the film. They're calling people vampires. They're referring to Bela Lugosi. Grandpa's a literal vampire drinking blood. And the vampires in the Dracula, they drink the blood for power. And David Icke talks about all this. And he refers it to as the constellation of Draco, where these people come from. Because Dracula comes from son of Dracul. Dracul means dragon. Takes us to the order of the dragon, and these are shape-shifting lizard people, and they feed off of negative energy, fear, and blood energy. And remember, the film started out telling us about how these body parts are arranged in a grisly ritualistic fashion. Furthermore, Leatherface wears the faces of his victims, skins over his face, and what is that? That's the frazzle drip. That's right. And if you don't know what I'm talking about, there's a woman with the initials HC that's alleged to be doing this exact practice of leaching adrenochrome from the face of a victim on the Anthony Weenie laptop, which I've read all of that's completely fake and staged. Seems like it is. You decide. Now, Toby Hooper says, this is a movie that's all about meat. Huh. And many people say it's actually the ultimate vegetarianism film because it shows humans going through slaughter like cattle do, especially when they're talking about how they kill cattle with a hammer. And we talked about all the idea of the elites and the Illuminati eating people. Well, I did a film analysis on the film Fresh years ago, which I did a two-parter. I did the film Fresh, and then we did a book review of Kurt Barker's book about all the elements that were found in the movie Fresh. Now, strangely enough, in Texas Chainsaw Massacre Next Generation with Matthew McConaughey, so you know it's all right, all right, all right, there's a strange reference to the Illuminati. In Next Generation, we find out there's an elite group that Leatherface and the whole family is working for, and they put on these shows of murder for the elites, for the Illuminati. And Matthew McConaughey drives a truck that says Illuminati Wrecking. And he's a sort of mind-controlled killer handled by the Illuminati. So there you go. Lots of actual real symbolism and conspiracy to connect in with Texas Chainsaw Massacre. And if you want more on Texas Chainsaw, there's two documentaries dropping this year. There's one called Dinner with Leatherface, a documentary about Gunnar Hansen, who plays Leatherface, and Chain Reactions is the other one with Patton Oswalt and so on. And it's rumored that A24 is going to be buying the rights to the franchise, so hopefully we'll get more Texas Chainsaw Massacre in the works, TV shows, movies, and so on. So there you go. There's my film breakdown, my analysis of Texas Chainsaw Massacre for this Happy Halloween or Samhain or whatever you want to call it, fall festival. You pick your path. But thanks for joining me. If you like the show, share it with a friend. That's how we grow the show, okay? And that's how I can keep plunking money into my studio. I've got this sweet mixer, thanks to you guys, where I can drop FX paddles, right? So, thanks for listening to the show. If you like the show, share it with a friend. If you love the show, leave a 5-star review, because that helps me combat the 1-star haters, right? I got 1-star haters. They don't like me. They don't like my message. So they try to destroy 15 years of work with a 1-star. And you can help me fight them with a 5-star review. All right. Thank you for your support. Until next time, stay positive.